Want to hear some great golf storytellers? Check out Invested in the Game, an original podcast from Charles Schwab. Each episode dives into the stories of people who have poured their time, resources, and passion into the world of golf, like Sam Hahn, CEO of Lab Golf, PGA Tour player Ben Griffin, and Nick Schreiber, the visionary behind Old Barnwell Golf Club. So why is Schwab doing a golf podcast? Because their clients don't just invest in markets, they invest in their passions too. Listen at charlesschwab.com/the game or wherever you get your podcasts.
We finally have one. I've been waiting for one in town. We have a Spirit Halloween going into Streetsboro.
All right.
And I saw the sign.
Not even August yet.
I went to the post office.
Congratulations on all your success.
And I'm not lying. I saw the truck and they were unloading the truck and putting things in there. And I parked my truck for a moment. I was there for like 5 minutes. And I watched them moving things into the store. It was like when the old, did you ever see like the old pictures, like people, the townspeople gathering when the circus would come to town?
Yes.
At the train station.
Welcoming
and they would,
them in.
Yes, and they would watch the menagerie come off the train. That's what I was like. That's what I felt like. I was so excited because I realized this. I've been to Spirit Halloween now many times. I don't think I've ever bought anything from Spirit Halloween. I think I just go in there as like,
you peruse.
This is a trip to like the fun house. And it's awesome. And all that stuff's robotic. I know you told me that horror story that you took baby Isabella in there.
Quite and literally went, a horror story.
Things went straight to hell as she was a little too young for the robotics.
And she had, and they're the biggest things in the world. I mean, they would scare anybody.
No, they're life size.
And they're bigger than that,
yeah.
Some of them. And
yeah, that's true.
They that gave her nightmares for literally 5 weeks. It was a disaster.
I took Axel. I've never taken Eli in. I took Jonah in with Axel, and they both had a blast. Liz was worried about Jonah. This was last year I took Jonah in. He was 5, and he was laughing his ass off. He thought it was the funniest thing. Jonah's been afraid to go trick-or-treating before, and he thought it was the funniest thing ever. I like going. It's like going to the zoo, going to the circus, going to the Spirit Halloween. Maybe I'll buy something someday. Maybe I won't. I don't know. I've been in there a bunch of times. I ain't never done it. But I got no problem looking. That's all they're trying to do is get you in the store, right? I get to put up the big 13-foot skeleton later on. I got the Jack Skellington that I'm going to put on. But I'm not going to do it till after Labor Day. Yes.
I have used that defense before where I'm like, hey, I'm just looking. I don't plan to, to partake.
Because then the stuff, you look at it and go, I could swing that. And because some people look, they go, $400 for something like this. I go, well, you know, Halloween's only here but once a year.
Well, it's still July right now, so.
Yeah.
Ration this out, and you can get that paid off.
That's a good point. Yeah,
but it's also getting longer and longer the setups for these yards, and they hold on longer and longer too.
And when you have invested that much money into it,
you gotta make it count.
Yeah,
well,
gotta get it out there.
Liz has been very stringent about the stuff that goes into the yard when it comes to Halloween. Now, I don't have the time or the capacity to make, like, we had one house in the neighborhood that it was an attraction. People came from miles around to see the house and to see the family were actors, and they were really into it. Like, it was really realistic and kind of scary for the kids, to be honest. But I don't have that type of time, and I don't have that type of an imagination, but I see some of this stuff, I'm like, I just want to put this in my yard.
I do feel like I need to feel that crispness of fall air, you know, before we put that out.
But then I felt it even more this morning because it was like walking into an air-conditioned house this morning when I got out of the truck.
It's not the same.
You're right. It's still July 31st. It's not the same, and that's why I still wait until, like, some people start, like, after 4th of July, it's spooky season. I go, no, you don't. I want to make it special. I don't want to do it too much.
Yeah,
I'm still wearing
special
white pants here, people.
Yes.
It's not special if you're going to that card that early.
I still wait until after Labor Day. After Labor Day, it's like, all right, I paid this much for Jack Skellington. He's going up. My buddy Brett comes over to help me with it because he's really good at just putting that stuff up. I might not have the patience for it.
That's the point of the holiday.
There you go.
You labor together.
Yes.
And does that
put up Jack Skellington?
Yes. Does Jack Skellington, does it hold well over the years? Like, you know, a Christmas tree, a fake Christmas tree, every year it gets a little flimsier when you're putting it in storage, taking it out of storage. Is Jack Skellington going to be with the Carmens for 20 years?
I put him together with care. I take him apart with care. I pack him away lovingly with care. Jack is so much a part of the family, but he only comes out for 2 months of the year. just like a family member you want to see, but you don't want to see too much of. Because you don't want them hanging around too long, and then all of a sudden it starts to become an eyesore, and people start to talk about you. Yeah, and then people in the neighborhood start to talk about you. Like, when are you going to take him down, bud?
And you're afraid, it's March. Afraid to have your kids in the company.
You want to get anything off your chest about your childhood here?
No, I'm just saying, eventually, you got that family member's got to go.
All of a sudden, I got to say the same thing for the Guardians that I think I've said for the Browns for a long time. Mitch, there was a video that Chris Rose, Mitch brought it to our attention, that Chris Rose had put out, that he was upset because the trading of Stephen Kwan, the possible trading of Stephen Kwan, I should say. And Lyme and I went in on a million reasons why the Guardians would do it and a million reasons why I would hate it. And that's why you use the free Odyssey app to go back and listen to the open of the show where it seems that maybe yesterday was Stephen Kwan's last game. Now, there are different people who feel differently about this. Ken Rosenthal is like, I'm still not so sure. And I would feel great when you still have 2 years of control over Stephen Kwan within your organization. However, Chris Rose had this to say about the entire spot, and it kind of, and this was a two-minute video. Now, we have a 23-second clip, but I want to listen closely because in this video, he did mention something else about jerseys. And I go, damn it. Have we not said this about the Browns for 26 years?
There are people that will be on your TV that are breaking down the reason why Stephen Kwan has to be traded. Because the Guardians have to live on the margins. Do they really have to? How about if you find a great player that's become a two-time All-Star and does it on both sides of the field, that you find a happy medium and extend the guy? Because if not, the fan base will sit here like this yet again, wondering why we can't buy a guy's jersey.
So Mitch was upset about that. Because he thought it was a silly reason or something like that. I don't know what Mitch was so bothered by. Mitch says he wants blank jerseys. It's better to buy a blank jersey. Are you there, Mitch? He's not there, of course. Why would he be?
That's my fault. We're going to get him up right now. Oh,
here he comes. He's okay. Here he comes. All right, Mitch. You say you buy blank jerseys, Mitch?
It's much more economically feasible to buy a blank jersey and have it for life than have it of a player that's going to leave you in 3 years. Or could leave you in 3 years.
Now, that's not as much fun. That might be more principled. That might make more sense.
Why wouldn't you just wear a Jose Ramirez jersey? He ain't going anywhere.
Even with the Jose Ramirez jersey, I feel like it makes more sense to just have the regular jersey as opposed to somebody who may not be on the team within a couple of seasons. The only time I think it makes sense is if you're going for a throwback uniform of somebody who's no longer on the team or somebody who's cashed in on a 10 to 15 year deal like a Shohei Ohtani, like a Juan Soto, because you have a pretty good idea of what's going to be happening there. But with guys even like Jose, where it's only going to be 5 years, yeah, you have those 5 years, but who knows where it's going to be after that, and you're just going to have a Jose Ramirez jersey in 2031, and he's not even going to be on the team anymore?
Tone, thoughts on that before I reply.
Well, the Jose Ramirez jersey thing, because that's the one you see the most of by far when you actually go to a game. Oh, and you speak to this better than anybody.
Also had a decade of him.
And he's been here so long. I could understand somebody not wanting a Jose Ramirez jersey because, especially, they might already have one, but everybody else has one. So you're not going to stick out. Right?
Right.
It's not just always about getting the most popular player.
My response is this. Everything you've just said is everything we've been saying about the Browns over the last umpteen years. And for anybody who's on their way into that building over there at Progressive Field and their offices, what have you guys always tried to not be doing over the last 25 years is be compared. And now you're being compared. Just pointing that out. Now, the Browns' reasons is because of their own players that they've drafted who have ended up sucking up the room. There is a difference there. But if we're warning people that they can't even buy a jersey, hello, what do we tell them? Well, you can't go wrong with a Joe Thomas jersey. Can't go wrong with it. I mean, Nick Chubb will probably be remembered as a Cleveland Brown unless he goes on some Saquon Terrence Houston, does everything.
Yeah, either way, you're still going to wear Nick Chubb's jersey.
Either way, you're still going to wear a Nick Chubb jersey.
For what he did on the field as a Cleveland Brown.
And you might actually even wear it for pride if, like, Texans went to the Super Bowl.
So you would wear a CC Sabathia jersey. You would wear a Jose Ramirez jersey.
Mm-hmm.
How many other jerseys would you wear? Like, there's a certain safety. This is the same damn conversation we have about the Cleveland Browns.
Boy, it's kind of crazy that, like, who would have thought Donovan Mitchell would be a safer jersey to own? The guy that was supposed to go to New York than Stephen Kwan.
And even I had to wait until he signed the extension to get the jersey because I was not going to bank on that beforehand.
It's a short fall, friends. It's a long climb to the top, but man, it's a very quick fall. Now all of a sudden you're being compared, and you're saying to get, because you can't get a blank NFL jersey.
No. Baseball specifically. Basketball and football looks weird.
I still think just get a name and a number on the back of the jersey, even if it's your
own. If it's a custom one, yeah, that's fine.
Like that. My God. Chris Rose did say in the video, and I didn't want to do this, and I don't think we have this part, but Chris Rose did say in his video, where, and he goes on Baskin and Phelps every week, where he had said that he had asked his son about it, and he said he would be as sad as he's ever been as a Cleveland sports fan. And for a moment, I wanted to say, boy, you ain't lived through nothing yet. I'm like, well, no, thank God but the kid ain't had to live through some of that other stuff that we've had to live through.
This is the beginning. I had to have the talk last year. We bought a Naylor jersey near the end of the season last year because we got a great deal on it, right? And gave it to my son, and we had to have that talk of like, hey, this is probably the end of it for him. And he was like, I don't care. I love him. And then when he got traded, he was still pretty upset.
What's the saddest you've been as a
Cleveland sports fan? I was just going to start to power rank him. Oh, I mean,
Wow.
Number one is
here
easy.
Here we go.
Number one is easy for me. Jose Mesa. 97.
Okay.
Number two, LeBron leaving the decision. First time. Number three. Trying to think, there's got to be a Browns moment.
I think there's one big Browns moment you're missing here, but okay.
What, trading for Deshaun Watson or getting rid of Baker?
No, leaving in 95. That's a pretty sad moment.
Yeah.
Got guys crying out there in the stands.
Yeah.
Holding hacksaws.
When
Chad Henne ran on 3rd and 14?
I was 13 at the time, and it was still.
Cameras on me. I can't do that anymore.
The whole thing was just so weird. You're right. That should have just flown out of my mouth.
That's the recent one, right?
I think older guys, definitely. That's number one, probably, right? That's ahead of LeBron. That's ahead of World Series.
When it came to actual performances on the field, like the Browns leaving the 95 is a totally separate category. Mm-hmm. I hurt. 97, number one. 97's number one. I really want to say 2015. I was really down in 2015. I thought we got robbed, and I was nervous we would never get it again. But then 2016 overshadows it.
That's a make good.
You want to know? This is something that's probably going to surprise a lot of people.
The rain delay in 2016.
Baker's last game against the Browns, or with the Browns against the Steelers. That was a sad, sad, sad night.
Yeah, people are tweeting us about that game today.
That was
a sad night.
That was definitely top three sad times.
Well, because you could feel the divorce coming.
Yep. The phone going off. It basically became a rock concert at his expense.
That also, like, Ben's last home game.
Uh-huh. That whole deal. And you knew, like, we had heard about Deshaun Watson stuff, but you weren't fully convinced it was going to happen, obviously. And we're getting texts throughout that game, and it's like, this is it. He's done. And then the articles came out the next day. Like, no matter what they do, he ain't going to be here next year. And boy, that was sad.
Baker was 16 of 38 that game.
Oh, my God.
Two picks. Got sacked 9 times.
Like, I was mad. When they lost to Duck Hodges, I was mad. That one, boy. Oof. Let's go to Mary Kay Cabot, who joins us right now on the fan hotline. Hello, Mary Kay.
Hello, guys. How you doing?
We're doing wonderful. Are the Browns being fair to Shedeur Sanders?
I think so. I think they've brought him along really, really nicely. In order to get him to the point where he can go out and function really well against his first reps against the first team defense, he had to get up to speed on certain things. And he's there. And they've done a really, really nice job with it. And he's done a nice job with it. He's been working his tail off. He has looked really good in practices, and I thought he did a nice job with the 4 snaps he got against the first team defense yesterday, and I think there probably will be more of those coming.
Then why are there people out there, and I'm not just talking about weird corners of the internet, I mean guys like Luther Campbell, for crying out loud, who say the Browns are trying to hurt him. The Browns are trying to what was the word that Luther Campbell used?
He says NFL owners drafted Shedeur Sanders in the 5th, thinking they'd break him.
Break him.
The day after his dad reveals he almost died, he goes 9-9. Brown's response, roll out the owner to say he didn't want him. That's like telling a kid you're a mistake. Can't break him. He's built different.
I mean, some of this stuff's just insane, Mary Kay. Come on.
Well, I actually have never seen anything like the Shador Sanders rhetoric on the internet. I've never seen anything like it. I mean, things were crazy during Johnny Manziel. Things were crazy during Baker Mayfield. I've never seen anything like this. Now, of course, there is even more social media and more people out there now with a voice, but it is just a very, very loud crowd out there. And most of the people that are opining on this situation really, really don't have the inside intel to know exactly what's going on here and what they're really talking about. But it seems like everybody is selling it as though they do, and a lot of people are buying into it.
Mary Kay, should he start to get ratcheted up in terms of more opportunities with the ones, against the ones, or is this really something that as Browns fans we have to accept that they are going to slow play this?
Well, they're heading into the real heart of the competition here over the next 2 weeks, and it's really unfortunate that Kenny Pickett pulled the hamstring or injured the hamstring, because he was really starting to come on strong, and I thought it was, for the most part, turning into a two-man race between Kenny Pickett and Joe Flacco. And now I think Joe has the decided edge. And if it seems like Joe Flacco is going to be the week one starter, then I don't know if you can give too many first-team reps to Dylan and to Shador going forward. Some of it will depend on what's going on with Kenny and when he's going to be able to get back into this race. But I think it's time to start trying to figure out who's going to be your starter. And if you think it's Joe, you've got to get him ready to play the season. So I don't know if you can dole out a whole bunch of those very, very quality 11 on 11s, first team reps to the younger guys, unless you really truly believe that one of them can come from behind and win that week one start.
So do you think we see Kenny Pickett during the preseason game in Carolina next week?
It all depends on that hamstring. They're reevaluating it today. We will know more about Kenny tomorrow when we get an update on how he's doing, how he's feeling. And it just depends. I don't know if it would be wise to rush him out there. I don't think he was going to play in the game anyways. I think one of the things on the table was to let Joe and Kenny really take the first team reps in the practice, and then let the young guys maybe split that game too. I think they will split the Philadelphia game, Dylan and Shador. But again, the Kenny injury has changed the game here a little bit. So not exactly sure what the strategy is, but I wouldn't expect to see too much of Kenny in the game.
So you were there for Jimmy Haslam, ND's press conference, and of course he was asked about who really made the pick for Shador Sanders in the fifth round. Were you buying what he was saying? Remember, this is the same owner who took all the blame for the Deshaun Watson move.
Yeah, I am buying what he was selling that day. He said it was Andrew's call. I felt all along that it was Andrew's call. I mean, I was there throughout the whole process of the Browns scouting Shador and doing their diligence on Shador. I went to the showcase. I watched Jimmy Haslam talk to Deion Sanders. I watched everything that Andrew Berry and Kevin Stefanski did. I watched how intently they watched every single throw that he made. I know how well they got to know him at dinner. I knew they really, really liked him as a person, and I can totally see why. He is really a cool guy, and if he sticks around here and fans get to know him, they're really, really going to like him. But I definitely think it was Andrew's call, just like everything else that happens from a personnel standpoint is Andrew's call. Now, from who plays and who starts, that's Kevin's.
If you love golf or just great storytelling, you've got to check out Invested in the Game, a new original podcast from Charles Schwab. Each episode highlights remarkable people who have dedicated their time, energy, and heart to the sport. You'll hear from voices like Sam Hahn, CEO of Lab Golf, PGA Tour player Ben Griffin, and Nick Schreiber, the visionary behind Old Barnwell Golf Club. Now, you might be wondering, why is Schwab doing a golf podcast? Well, you might already know Schwab from their five other podcasts covering investing and the markets. Quick plug, you can find those at schwab.com/podcasts. But this one's different. Invested in the Game goes beyond finance into something many of Schwab's clients are deeply passionate about. Golf. Schwab has supported the game for decades through events, promotions, and sponsorships at both the pro and collegiate level. This podcast is their way of sharing the incredible stories behind the game. Listen now at schwab.com/the game or wherever you get your podcasts.
Call. They know their roles on this football team. And sure, there may have been a day back in the day when Jimmy got more involved than he should have, such as with Johnny Manziel. But he doesn't do that anymore. He trusts these guys. He relies on these guys. And I firmly believe that when they got to the fifth round, they saw value there in Shador. And I think Andrew made that final call.
Are we being fair to Dylan Gabriel?
I think they're being fair for the most part in this quarterback competition, except for the fact that I do think it's starting to get to the point very soon where you have to be fair to the whole entire offense and the whole entire team and narrow it down and make sure that you're getting plenty of reps for the starter and that he has time to get his timing and chemistry down with his receivers, with his skill players, with his offense, sliding the protections, calling the motions, all the things that you have to do. I just think it has to be a smooth operation, and we saw last year that it wasn't. They were not ready to play that opener. They were not ready to play in the first quarter of the season. Injuries had a lot to do with that, but I think this year they have to get ready, and they're doing the best they can. But it's unorthodox to conduct a four-way quarterback competition, and it's a little challenging for everybody involved.
Mary Kay, join us right now on the hotline. So earlier in the show, we were talking about the weapons for whoever emerges as the quarterback, and I asked Kenny, is Deontay Johnson not only a lock to make the team, when all is said and done, could he be like the number two wide receiver on this team, which would have been just insane to say that. Like a month ago, this is a guy who looked like he was going to be out of the league. So what have you seen so far? Is this a big-time reclamation project they could potentially be proud of?
Well, yeah, I think it actually is. The whole thing with Deontay, he's got the talent. And when you watch a Pro Bowl receiver out there practicing, running routes, and catching passes, it hits differently when you watch a Pro Bowler. It just does. He's got Jerry Jeudy-type Pro Bowl talent. That's who he is. We know that because he's proven that already. So he's pretty incredible at what he can do on the football field, and that really hasn't been the problem. The problem has been off the field with the attitude and with the buying in and with being part of the program and kind of keeping himself together. And if he can do that, then they're on to something here. But that's the whole key. They're supporting him with the infrastructure. He seems to be falling in line. He seems to be getting along with people. He seems to be pretty happy. I saw him with his kids out there the other day. He seems to be fitting in, and that's the whole key with him. If he can do that, if he can keep that up, then they will have another Pro Bowl receiver on the roster.
What has been the interpretation of the camp so far? We've had it was supposed to be a tougher camp 2 years ago. Last year, it seemed to be easy. This year, some people are saying tougher. What have some of the players said? And honestly, I want to know maybe some of the opinions of some of the guys who weren't here last year and in guys who are in other camps, what they think of it this year.
Well, it is a tougher camp, and they started live tackling yesterday. It was a live practice yesterday, and we are all looking out there going, what? We had never seen that before. In a Kevin Stefanski practice. We haven't seen it since back in the siren days of Hugh Jackson. And it was pretty interesting to see that. And all the players that we talked to, they loved it. The linebackers love the hitting. Jerome Ford, even though he's coming off of an injury, he liked the contact. Jack Conklin was embracing it. So I think they like what's going on. They know that they have to get tougher. That's the whole mantra of this football team this season.
Mary Kay Cabot joining us here on the Fan Hotline. Are there any possible trades that the Browns could make or people they could bring in after the MJ Emerson injury?
Of course they will keep their eyes peeled for cornerbacks and adding to that room and bolstering that room. I don't know if anything is in the works right now. Sometimes an off day like today is a day where everyone kind of regroups and figures out what's going to be happening in the next block. They're going block by block. But certainly this block was a little bit challenging because they lost Kenny Pickett for at least a little while to a hamstring, and they lost Martin for the season, to his Achilles injury, which is so unfortunate for him and for them. So I don't know if they have anything in the offing right now, but once again, these off days are days when sometimes those behind the scenes things start happening.
How could the injury affect MJ Emerson's contractual future with the Cleveland Browns?
Well, he is in the final year of his rookie contract, so the timing for him is not good. He's got to get back, and he's got to rehab that Achilles, and he's got to prove that he can be out there and be healthy and be on the football field. And when that happens, I'm sure that's when they'll address his contract or do some kind of a shorter-term thing and try to get him back to where he needs to be. But plenty of guys come back strong from Achilles. Now, sometimes it's not until their second year that they're completely themselves, but we've watched Grant Delpit come back from an Achilles. Jordan Hicks had two Achilles surgeries. So it absolutely can be done. Of course, cornerback, you really, really rely on your speed. So it's probably tougher for a cornerback, obviously, to come back from an Achilles than it would be for some other positions. But he's young, he's determined, and the Browns certainly want him around and will do everything they can to keep him.
Mary Kay Cabot with us on the Fan Hotline. Okay, what about DeJuan Jones? He's going into year three. It's a four-year contract, if I'm not mistaken, as a fourth-round pick. If he has a good season, could he end up getting paid? Could he get the money that they always wanted to give Jed Wills, but he wasn't good enough to claim?
Sure, this is a great opportunity for DeJuan. If you can make your mark as a left tackle in the NFL, you are going to hit the jackpot. And this is a big, big season for him. And he's getting battle tested in practice every day. Myles Garrett is never going to go easy on DeJuan Jones, and that's good for him. Now, we did see him get carted off yesterday, but it turned out to be only a heat-related issue. So they dodged a little bit of a bullet there. It was kind of scary to see him getting carted off. He was sitting up. He was in the front of the cart. It wasn't anything to be overly alarmed about, but still, you never want to see that in practice. So if he can nail down that very, very important spot, then he will hit pay dirt.
Is Quinshon Judkins out of sight, out of mind until we have any sort of an update?
For the most part, yes. I mean, they have had to move on. Again, they're in block two. They're in pads all this week, and the running game has been a big, big point of emphasis. You're seeing tons of Dylan Sampson, who looks really, really good. Jerome Ford is back in action, and he also looks good, and I think he's got plenty to prove since they kind of demoted him. So they have had to move forward, and I think they also have to plan for a possible suspension for Quinshon, so they have to see what it looks like without him.
He will play this year, right?
I believe he will, yes. Even Jimmy said the other day that he's cautiously optimistic that Quinshon will get signed and be back here. With the legal process still playing out, it's hard to predict, and this one's taking longer than some have, and it's hard to pin that down. But I do believe he will be on the field this year.
Mary Kay Cabot, we thank you very much for the time, and we will talk to you again next week. Thank you so much.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
Mary Kay Cabot on the Fan Hotline. Just had Mary Kay on. Asked her about Shador, the fairness to Shador, the Browns being fair to Shador. Are we being fair to Shador? I think the Cleveland media has been very, the ones I listen to anyway, I think we've been very fair to Shador Sanders. I think we've been very hospitable to Shador Sanders.
We've gone out of our way. If anything, I've been unfair to Dylan Gabriel and to Kenny Pickett.
Well, that's an interesting one because Daryl had something to say about Dylan Gabriel. I'm going to play that here in a second. Now, it wasn't like he was mean-spirited. James Rapine, boy, just was nasty about it with Dylan Gabriel. Ken Wyman said he wasn't even an NFL quarterback during Around the AFC North yesterday, 105.7 The Fan in Baltimore. And then Daryl was, where was Daryl at? Was it Afternoon Drive yesterday? Was on the station at some point yesterday and had this to say about Dylan Gabriel. On Bengals as well as Sports Illustrated. Who would you start if you were the Cleveland Browns? Who would you start at quarterback?
Shador Sanders.
Week one?
Whoa!
Well, for sure, week one. But
whoa!
Can we start by giving him some first-team reps?
No.
What the hell are you drafting him for if you're not going to give him a few reps with Jerry Jeudy?
So that was James on Shador. Do we have Daryl on Dylan Gabriel?
I believe so.
Here we go. Apologies, everybody, including to Owen. Go ahead.
Dylan Gabriel shows some flashes, but he's a 7-on-7 quarterback. Like, But I feel like with the reps that they're giving.
If you love golf or just great storytelling, you've got to check out Invested in the Game, a new original podcast from Charles Schwab. Each episode highlights remarkable people who have dedicated their time, energy, and heart to the sport. You'll hear from voices like Sam Hahn, CEO of Lab Golf, PGA Tour player Ben Griffin, and Nick Schreiber, the visionary behind Old Barnwell Golf Club. Now, you might be wondering, why is Schwab doing a golf podcast? Well, you might already know Schwab from their five other podcasts covering investing and the markets. Quick plug, you can find those at schwab.com/podcasts. But this one's different. Invested in the Game goes beyond finance into something many of Schwab's clients are deeply passionate about. Golf. Schwab has supported the game for decades through events, promotions, and sponsorships at both the pro and collegiate level. This podcast is their way of sharing the incredible stories behind the game. Listen now at schwab.com/the game or wherever you get your podcasts.
With the first team offense, they're preparing him to play this year. I don't know that that's a great idea, having him play this year, because I just don't think he's a legit NFL starter caliber quarterback. But that's obviously what they're going to do and what they want to do. Jimmy Haslam kind of made it pretty apparent yesterday that he wants to see that this year.
If we're being disrespectful to anybody in that quarterback room, we're being disrespectful to Dylan Gabriel.
And I'll probably continue to be that way.
Yeah, honestly, yeah.
Like, at least with Shador, the people that are being disrespectful to Shador, and they have their motivations, whatever it may be, and we've gone over those in the past, they're lying to you. Like, they just won't outwardly say it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm basically telling you that I'm not being fair to Dylan Gabriel.
You just did?
Yeah.
There's
you
no basically
told us
about
you
it.
You only care about one quarterback on the team.
Yeah.
And everybody, I think, agrees with you.
Yeah, I want Joe Flacco to be good to go to start the season.
But you don't care about Joe Flacco and his future with the Browns?
Beyond the first however many games.
Mm-mm. No.
It's like, all right, we've got to start to see, because I'm assuming, of course, that they're going to lose games.
Yeah.
And that the baton needs to be passed, like, sooner rather than later, because we know what's coming in the draft. So that's my mindset right now. Is that a fair mindset? No. Like, you can't have that mindset if you're in Berea, because guys are trying to win games. Guys are trying to, you know, earn contracts. You've got coaches and a GM that are trying to save their jobs.
I want people on the record right now.
They can't act like I'm acting.
Are we being wrong? Are we wrong to be dismissive of Dylan Gabriel? I think Owen needs to put together the montage just in case. If he'll get his crack at it, I think all four are going to get a crack at it. And he'll get his, and I think I'd be very surprised. But if Dylan Gabriel took off, then I think, Owen, you need to put the montage together. Everybody likes to put together the negative montage. Remember, we were featured in a commercial with a negative montage. You remember that. Everybody loves to put together the haters, the doubters. I think you need to put together the montage for Dylan Gabriel. The ones who are saying, not even an NFL quarterback, a 7-on-7 quarterback. That's as backhanded as it gets. Sorry, Daryl ain't here to defend himself. He will be tomorrow. But that's as backhanded as it gets when you call guys 7-on-7 quarterback. It's like you don't think any highly of them. Nobody really knows why he was drafted in the third round or here. I know he has a great mind for football, and it's like, okay, well, he'd be a good football coach. I need him to be a good quarterback then. Can he be a good quarterback at the NFL level? I think a lot of people just doubt it and say, they either say no or they say, I have my doubts. I sincerely have my doubts. So I'm not trying to be disrespectful to Dylan Gabriel. I find it hard not to be dismissive of Dylan. I don't mean anything nasty. I feel bad saying that. I feel that the other three, like, you look at Shador and you go, man, there's a ceiling there, man. There's a ceiling with this young man. There's a big, big, big ceiling here where if it clicks, good arm, athleticism's all right, processing's good, accuracy's pretty good, these things, there's a ceiling here with this guy. Mel Kiper wasn't just farting in your general direction over saying he's a first-round guy and then getting emotional over the entire thing. And then when you get to Kenny Pickett, you go, okay, well, could we try to say that Kenny's going to be our Sam Darnold? Yeah, probably not. But there's a little bit of a hope there. Well, you know, it worked out for the Seattle Seahawks. People thought they were going to suck, and Geno Smith ended up being pretty good for him. And Sam Darnold ended up getting his career off the mat. And maybe you're going to be able to do it for Kenny. Joe Flacco, I mean, he's a fan favorite. He's an elder statesman, and you let him to the playoffs. But nobody thinks that he's going to be around for very long, and neither does Joe, in all honesty. And they got Dylan Gabriel, and I think a lot of fans just go, what are you doing here? What are you doing here?
Well, he also doesn't have a fan base right now. Like,
he has some people on the internet. It's just not Shador is the fan base is an animal of its own.
Right? Yeah, we're just not even hearing from them. They're not begging us to talk about him the way that Shador. I mean, I made the mistake of saying that the Shador storyline has not been nearly as big as I thought it would be when they drafted him, and people jumped all over me and they started linking me to talking heads at Fox and ESPN who were bringing up Shador every day. And I'm like, well, yeah, it's SEO. Every time they mention him, it's content that you're going to click on. Mm. But I can't deny, like, nobody's talking about Dylan Gabriel. Nobody cares about Dylan Gabriel. We don't have a fan base in our mentions every day on Dylan Gabriel.
Is it disrespectful to dismiss Dylan Gabriel here?
Probably.
Is it really disrespectful?
He was, in terms of value, the Browns affixed more value to that selection than they did taking Shador 144th
overall.
How
am I being disrespectful? I've called him smart. I said he was a good college quarterback. That's not disrespectful. He's not a dummy.
Daryl said he was a 7-on-7 quarterback.
Once
you throw an offensive line and defensive line in there, it changes things. I'm like, whoa.
Daryl, that is a backhanded type of shot, but I'll leave it there because do we want to throw that in his face tomorrow morning? Daryl joins us at 8, right? Or 8:20, whichever one. You can't miss any of the show. That's why you have to listen for all 4 hours. We'll get it. We'll throw it right in Daryl's face coming up tomorrow morning. He ain't going to know what hits him. Well, I'm not trying to be mean-spirited to Dylan Gabriel or disrespectful. I just think it's open and honest to be dismissive of Dylan Gabriel. People were shocked when he was taken in the third round. People were shocked that he was taken and that Shador Sanders was on the board, but we'll leave Shador Sanders off for another conversation. Look at where it was with Dylan Gabriel. You know your reaction when they drafted Dylan Gabriel. And I think a lot of people felt the same way when they drafted Cody Kessler, and you know who was saying you got to trust him on this. Because there were a couple of people around when it was the Senior Bowl, there were a couple of people around him, but there wasn't that big of a hubbub, and we knew that Kevin liked him. Okay, well, how many people really trust Kevin right now? It's under 50%. Maybe I'm being generous about that. So I'm only trying to be fair and honest about being dismissive of Dylan Gabriel. Doesn't mean I'm rooting against him. Doesn't mean that. I'm rooting for him. I root for any quarterback who's playing for the Cleveland Browns. So I want him to do well. But I can only be open and honest because I see where Shador's ceiling could be. What's Dylan Gabriel's ceiling? What is his ceiling? 8-year veteran backup in the NFL? What's the ceiling?
Yeah,
college football coach, NFL football coach? What's his ceiling? Franchise quarterback for the Cleveland Browns? Don't close your eyes if you're driving, obviously. If you're at a stoplight for just a moment, close your eyes and envision it. Shador Sanders, franchise quarterback for the Cleveland Browns. Even the haters can envision it. Kenny Pickett, harder to envision
it. Yeah.
But
he's been a starter.
He's been a starter. He was taken in the first round.
With a winning record.
Can you really? We did this with coaches all the time. Can you imagine Coach X actually holding the Lombardi Trophy? All right, can you imagine Dylan Gabriel being a franchise quarterback for the Cleveland Browns? The fifth-round guy is easier to imagine as the franchise quarterback of the Browns than it is for the third-round guy. None of what I'm saying is said with any malice or hate in my heart or any mean-spiritedness in my heart. I think the challenge is laid. I think the challenge is out there for everybody. Do you think I'm being mean?
I don't think you're being mean at all. I think I've been more mean than you have.
Owen, am I being mean?
No.
I'm not trying to be mean. It might come off as mean, but you guys know me. I try to be a nice guy for the most part. I'm not trying to be mean to the guy. He seems like a nice enough guy. There's plenty of nice guys that aren't NFL caliber franchise quarterbacks. Like Dylan Gabriel will start games, and I think he'll actually start games not just for the Cleveland Browns. I think he's smart enough where he could be a backup quarterback in the NFL. And if he can stay out of harm's way, maybe he can be a backup quarterback in the NFL for a while.
I mean, we've started 11 quarterbacks the last 2 years. So.
I can close my eyes and envision guys in college right now that could be franchise quarterbacks for the Cleveland Browns. Not named Arch Manning, don't even start. I can imagine guys in college right now. I can imagine the other two quarterbacks, not Joe, but the two other quarterbacks being franchised. I just can't do it. I have to be honest with you guys, not to be mean.
Want
to
hear some great golf storytellers? Check out Invested in the Game, an original podcast from Charles Schwab. Each episode dives into the stories of people who have poured their time, resources, and passion into the world of golf, like Sam Hahn, CEO of Lab Golf, PGA Tour player Ben Griffin, and Nick Schreiber, the visionary behind Old Barnwell Golf Club. So why is Schwab doing a golf podcast? Because their clients don't just invest in markets, they invest in their passions too. Listen at charlesschwab.com/the game or wherever you get your podcasts.